Hey, everybody, it's Jordan Rudess over here at home in New York, and you are listening to the 9-8 podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the 9-8 podcast, the home of progressive and underground music here in Australia. My name is Alex Hogg, and I'm joined, as every fortnight, by Dave Ellis. Hello, Dave.
G'day, g'day. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I am, yeah, pretty well, actually. We're all moved into the new apartment, my wonderful girlfriend and I, which is great, except for the fact that we don't have internet at the moment. So I'm actually pinching my neighbor's internet to record this episode.
I am recording this episode from the 4G connection provided to me by Telstra from my phone.
Yay! So, let's not talk about Telstra, because they're part of the problem why I don't have internet at the moment.
Yeah, so. We'll park that completely. Mm-hmm. We have a big show to get through today.
Absolutely.
And we'll start with some follow-up from our episode from two episodes ago, where we yelled about the New South Wales government being horrible jerks. Another topic all at the moment, because it turns out the opposition leader is also a horrible jerk, but we'll park that one for another day.
There's been so much that's happened since our drugs episode came out. There was, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, which I had to record in before we released it, there was a whole march. There was a new bill that's been introduced into New South Wales Parliament, basically to get rid of these lockout laws. There have been a whole bunch of stuff that's happened to sort of aid the underground scene here in Sydney and in the wider of New South Wales as well. But you found something really interesting from the New Zealand government, didn't you?
Yes. So the New Zealand national drug policy that they have introduced, this is the national drug policy that started in 2015. It's due to go to 2020. And it talks about the idea behind it is to reduce harm that is already occurring, reduce the desire to use alcohol and other drugs, and prevent or reduce the availability of alcohol or other drugs. Mm. Now, the idea of reducing harm sounds like a good idea, and it seems like that they're going to be experimenting with a bunch of different ideas.
Yeah.
Some of which I think the New South Wales government probably should take a look at. Hint, hint. But
yeah, right.
I doubt they actually will.
Yeah, no, of course not. We know that harm reduction works.
Yes,
that's the
exactly.
reality. I mean, you look at a lot of other countries, and you know, I've mentioned them before, but the Dutch, over in the Netherlands, and you know, many other places where they have that harm minimization technique added, and it's way better than anything that we have here.
Oh, absolutely. Even the Americans are getting in on it. We mentioned this in the episode about what they're doing in Seattle with, you know, safe injection rooms and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I just can't understand why we're not doing it. But for those of you who this is your first episode of listening to us, please go back and listen to that episode from two episodes ago and have a listen to what we've got to say, because if we continue on, we're probably just going to retread everything that we've already said. And we have a much, much bigger news story that we need to cover, the new Dream Theater album.
Oh, yeah. And a States US tour celebrating 20 years. 20 years? Yeah, 20 years since Scenes from a Memory was released, which is going to be amazing, because for once I get the opportunity to make you jealous, Hoggy, because I am flying to New York to see it. So
you're flying to New York.
Yes.
If you don't take a picture out the front of Trump Towers, you're an asshole.
No, my girlfriend surprised me with it, because when I was going on about the new album and the tour and everything like that, and she said, "Well, I have bought you tickets, so we're going."
Oh, nice. Whereabouts in New York are they doing it? Are they doing it at the was it the Roseland Ballroom last that they did the Scenes from New York show?
I should clarify that, actually. She said she will buy tickets, because I don't think they're on sale yet. So I'm not 100% sure exactly where it's going to be. I'm kind of hoping it's like Radio City Music Hall or something.
I can pretty well guarantee you it will not be Radio City Music Hall. I was reading the Lifting Shadows biography of Dream Theater a couple of nights ago, and in that book, Mike Portnoy was bitching mercilessly about the union regulations for playing in the Radio City Music Hall, and apparently they lost money on that show.
Oh, wow. Okay, but it was sold out.
Because of all the union regulations, and they had to pay certain theatre people to do certain things, even though they actually did fuck all and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah, right.
I can pretty well guarantee you they will not be playing the Radio City Music Hall again.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, look, it very well could be the case.
And it's not like there's a shortage of places in New York to play.
No, of course not.
You know,
no,
hometown band, all that, I'm sure they can find somewhere else to play. So the new record itself is called Distance Over Time.
Yes.
Which is an interesting one. I saw many people making jokes of, oh, why didn't they just call it Velocity? Ha ha.
That's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, hey, why don't we just start a thing now and just call it the Velocity Record? We'll just call it, just start a thing, Velocity Record.
All right, cool. So the new album by Dream Theater, Velocity. I really like the cover art. The cover art looks incredible. Now, I noticed something on the cover art, and I don't know if this has been sort of asked around the internet or anything like that. It possibly has. There's on the back of the skull, there's a little 137 on the back of the skull, like imprinted into the... Did you not see that?
No, I didn't, actually.
So there's a part of me that kind of hopes it's like a Rick and Morty reference because they're from Dimension C-137. But I don't think it would be. I think it's probably something else. So it could be really interesting to see what that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. There is something on the back of the skull there. Mm. I've just pulled it up on my computer here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is something on the back of the skull. What is that? Mm.
It's, yeah,
could
137.
Could it be a continuance of this ARG thing?
Look, it totally could be. I don't know. I mean, the ARG was obviously a great big success. It was finally figured out, and there was a we posted this on the fan club page. There was a big post where the guy actually chose to sort of spread the information out, which was then able for all the fan clubs around the world to actually then disseminate the information, which was great. And on that page as well, there was a teaser for a new song on there. Did you listen to that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, this was where I was going by bringing this up, is that what do you think we're going to get from the new Dream Theater record?
Well, apparently, and I was talking to the president of Dream Theater World a little while ago, or the head of Dream Theater World. I don't know if he calls himself the president or whatever, Kim. And he actually said to me, and I said, so, is this indicative of what the rest of the album's going to be? And he said, apparently when they were organizing this, because he was quite involved in obviously the release of it and all that, because he does quite a lot of media stuff for Dream Theater. And he said, we want a piece of the album that is indicative of what the entire album is like. And that's what they gave.
Okay. That's
so
very interesting. Okay.
It's basically Awake meets Scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen them talking about it in the press. They're talking about calling it a quote-unquote classic Dream Theater album.
Yep.
Which is probably fair enough given the mixed reaction to The Astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
I think even the band have acknowledged that some of the reaction to it has been mixed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People either really like it or people absolutely hate it.
Yep, absolutely.
Teaser for next week, we're going to go back and have a look at The Astonishing now that it's been out for a couple of years and give our thoughts and opinions on that record. So stay tuned for that one next time around.
Absolutely. And that will obviously play as part of a sort of a segue almost into the new album, which we are both champing at the bit to actually listen to. Unfortunately, we have to wait like everyone else.
Yes.
So we will let you know. We can't publish anything ahead of time because if we do, then we'll never get to be able to publish anything ever again.
Exactly.
So
I did see, actually, there was a link that went around. Someone had allegedly had a leaked song from the new Dream Theater record.
Yeah.
And turns out it's actually a song from one of James LaBrie's solo records. And this is a leak that's been going around for ages.
Yes. Yeah. It was something off Static Impulse, I think, from memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I thought was great. It was like, oh yeah, someone's going to leak a thing and see how many people get sucked in. I'm surprised it didn't end up on Blabbermouth.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? I know. maybe the guys at Blabbermouth are finally friggin' woken up to it, because I think they got stung last time, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah.
Well, they probably figured it. They can't put Mike Portnoy in the headlines and roll up their fan base, so they didn't bother publishing it.
Exactly.
If they can't link to a quote from Mike Portnoy, then they don't bother.
That's true. I'm just hoping they bring that tour worldwide as well, because
I hope so as well.
I mean, they've sort of got this habit of missing Australia and so on quite a lot, and I can kind of understand why, because we are far away from, you know, everything else, so we need people to get onto the promoters and actually say, no, we want them, especially, I mean, if they're doing 20 years of Scenes from a Memory, if they do the whole Scenes from a Memory albums, so sort of top to tail, and then do some of the stuff off the new album, I think that'd be an absolute ripper of a show.
Yeah, exactly. Just on that as well, I've mentioned this a couple of times on the forum, so I think it's worth mentioning on the show as well. I had a conversation with one of the promoters. I think it may have been Tom Bowler or DRW Entertainment. I can't remember which one. And I asked them, I said, what do we have to do to get Dream Theater to come to Australia? And their response to me was, wait until they've got a fully booked Asian tour, and then we can try and squeeze in a couple of shows. I mean, that's what happened on the last tour, wasn't it? They literally flew in from Korea, did Sydney and Melbourne, and then flew back to China or somewhere.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Which was, I mean, it makes sense, you know, they're there. They're kind of, it's a kind of a hop, skip, and a jump.
Pretty much.
By comparison to what they're normally doing. But that being said, I mean, it's only 14 hours from the US anyway. Well, it's a bit longer from New York. But, I mean, it would be nice to have them come from, you know, LA and then come straight into Brisbane and do Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, and then fly from Perth up to, you know, Jakarta or something and do all that up there. That would sort of make more sense to me.
Possibly. Maybe it's just the economics of, okay, well, they've already got all their stuff in Japan and they're playing big shows in Japan, so then they can come down to Australia from there or something.
Possibly.
That was the way it was couched in terms of economics, trying to get the economics of it so they could make the trip down here. Because by comparison, the shows that they play in Australia are quite small compared to what they play in Japan.
Yeah,
they might
absolutely play
to 15 or 20,000 people in Japan. They come down to Sydney and they're playing to, what, 5,000 people, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the reality is nowadays with modelling technology and all that sort of stuff, and we've spoken about this before, they don't need to bring amps and cabs and all that. And in any case, they can hire them here.
Like, oh, absolutely.
The biggest problem, I think, is probably the drum kit.
They could, yeah, all they do is they bring the drum kit. I mean, they can hire. I mean, I know numerous guitarists. Maybe some of them don't want me to mention it publicly, but at least it was mentioned on a DVD that John Petrucci, all his cabinets aren't actually plugged in. He gets plugged straight into the front of house.
Yeah, the cabinets isolation box, actually, from memory.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure exactly what happens here now, but the reality is with the new Fractal stuff and all that sort of stuff, I mean, you can have all of your patches on a USB stick, fly to another country halfway around the world, plug it in, upload them, and then just go. You know, my band's looking at we're doing a couple of shows in Melbourne, actually, in January, and I'm not bringing amps and everything like that. I'm bringing my modeler and a guitar, and that's it, because I ain't lugging amps through airports and shit like that. Because
oh no, the hell with that. No. That's a mugs game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lugging all that crap through an airport.
No.
I mean,
no.
Fine if you're the Rolling Stones or U2 or whatever.
Exactly.
But,
and you got people to
you
do
know,
it for
at this
you.
Level. Definitely not.
Exactly. Now, speaking of tours, last night I had the opportunity to go and see Stephen Wilson.
And I want to get it on record right now that you're a bastard and that I hate you. We're just balancing up the jealousy ledger.
Well, see, yeah. There's finally one on my column. Still looking a little underweighted, but that's okay. Yeah. And I'm just going to put it straight out there right now and say, the best opening to a show that I've ever seen, hands down,
Really?
Yep. The opening thing was like this. It was like an audiovisual presentation. This voice came out over the speakers and basically said, you know, we're going to show you a short video. Please enjoy. It's basically there to gauge how you'll respond to the themes of the show. And then I had this sliding picture show basically with words over it. And then it was with this kind of like old-timey 1930s kind of jovial music, kind of like you'd imagine if you walk into like a saloon kind of thing. But as the music went on further, this ominous low-end sub sound came up and all the images started to repeat but with different words over the top of them. It sounds really weird, right, without actually being there.
It does sound very weird.
But it was so cool. It was really, really cool. And then he came in, obviously, came out and played some stuff. And the set list from last night was just unbelievable. It was so good. And talk about being tight. Like, they were so tight, those guys. And interestingly, Wilson actually came out, I think it was after the second song. He said, thanks, you know, hi, Sydney, da da da. He said, it's great to be here playing a seated gig. He said, there are some places around the world where I don't think seated gigs actually work, and Sydney is one of them. So a little bit later in the show, I'm going to ask you guys to stand up because
I know when he's going to ask you to stand up. He's going to ask you to stand up during Perminating.
Yeah,
and try and get all the guys in King Crimson t-shirts who've been glaring at him all night to dance.
but it was really good. Like, and the whole thing was just unbelievable. It was so good. What pissed me off though last night was the fact that they started fucking late, and I'm not sure if they actually started late or if they fucked it up on their website, because their website said doors were at 7 and Stephen went on at 7:30.
Right.
We didn't get let in till 8 o'clock.
Really?
And it was fucking cold yesterday for Sydney. It was cold because it was windy. And if you've ever stood in Enmore, at the Enmore Theatre there, it's just a wind tunnel. It's just, you just get wind all the way up there.
Maybe there was some technological snafu or something. They had to push everything back an hour.
I'm not sure about that, because a friend of mine, another photographer who I know quite well, Amelia, who she did every single gig that I go to, right? Because her and I both do all the heavy scene and everything like that. And she said, oh, no, it's supposed to start at 8, doors open at 8, I asked the box office. And I said, so why the fuck is it 7 on the website then? And everyone in the line who was standing there as well overheard us and went, are you fucking serious? Like, they could have been at the pub having a beer, but instead they've been standing in line because they thought that it was starting at fucking 7 o'clock.
Damn.
And it's like, okay, get your shit together, guys. Hey, Enmore Theatre. Okay, here's a quick call out to the Enmore Theatre. Get your shit together. Make sure the website and what's actually happening on the day are in fucking sync so people don't waste their fucking evening, yeah?
And if they're not, like someone realises that, oh, shit, hang on, we've cocked up here, send a message out to people and say, hey, actually, we're going to delay doors. Lie, make it up. I don't care. Tell them, oh, there's been a technological malfunction and we're going to have to push doors back an hour.
Yep.
And just tell people.
Yep. Another thing that's kind of a bit irritating about the Enmore Theatre, because it was in seating mode, so the front half of the actual Enmore Theatre was all seated and then the back half was all standing. It's kind of odd. And then you've got the dress circle at the top as well, which is always seated. It was kind of an odd setup. So as a photographer, they were saying to us, oh, you have to shoot from the sides.
Oh, what?
So I arced up. And this, this is ridiculous. How are we supposed to do this? There were some guys there who came prepared. They had 200mm lenses and 300mm lenses and everything like that. But I'm there going, well, we can't do this. Like, this is, I've got a 24-70 man and an 11-16. I can't, you know. So anyway, they went and asked someone and whatnot. And they said, yeah, okay, you've got 3 songs at the front. Just try and stay as low as you can. So thank you, you know. So it's like they don't seem very organized there for rock gigs, which is really weird because they were always really organized for rock gigs from when I remember anyway.
Well, it seemed an odd place for them to play, for Stephen Wilson to play anyway, because it's such a small theater.
Yeah, but it's bigger than the Metro.
I thought he would have been playing somewhere bigger.
It's bigger than the Metro, but it's smaller than Like, I don't think he would have sold out Horden Pavilion or Max Watts or anything like that because they're slightly bigger.
Okay. Or the big top one where we saw Dream Theater at Luna Park.
Yeah, I don't think he would have sold that out.
No, if I don't think Dream Theater sold that out.
Yes, no problem. But I don't think Stephen Wilson would have done it.
Okay, that's interesting. Also, as well, as we've discussed before on the show, he has certain requirements for his, you know, certain acoustics and places for audio visual setups and stuff like that.
Yep.
So maybe that's probably came into it.
Well, the AV thing was quite prevalent throughout the whole night. So,
oh yeah, that's, you know, he's very much into that whole sort of Pink Floyd, Roger Waters thing with the big backdrops and audio visual stuff. And didn't Nanette play? Did she come on the backdrop as well and do a duet?
Yes. Yep. It was really cool, actually. It was actually really, really cool.
Yeah, well, he did that on the last tour when I saw him on the Hand Cut I Raised tour in Utrecht. Mm-hmm. That was the same thing because Nanette had just had a child, I believe, or was at home expecting the child. I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. And she came on the backdrop and did her portions of the set as well.
I've got to do a quick shout out as well to a gentleman that I met in the line at the Stephen Wilson gig. I'm really sorry, mate. I can't remember your name, but you did mention that you listened to the podcast. So hello, good to meet you the other night, and please get people to listen as well. So it was very funny. I got recommended to myself.
You actually got what someone said, hey, you should listen to this podcast.
Yeah, quite literally. He said, I've been listening to this podcast because we were talking about gig etiquette and because I was whinging about the doors not being open. And this guy goes, da-da-da. He says, oh, actually, I just finished listening to this podcast. I'm listening to this new podcast. And the two guys on it were whinging about gig etiquette. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what's it called? He goes, the 9-8 podcast. And I'm like, oh, right. And he goes, have you heard of it? And I said, yeah. And he sort of looked at me, and then I think the penny dropped. And he went, oh, and I'm like, hi, I'm Dave. And he goes, oh, fuck.
So, don't feel embarrassed at all.
No, it was
It's
it
not
was,
like you're wandering around handing out business cards or anything saying, hey, listen to our show.
No, you know what? I was thinking about that last night, actually. I was standing in the line. I should have gone up the whole line, just been like, you know.
I'm thinking about doing that for Jordan Rudess when I go and see him in Melbourne.
Yeah, that might be an idea, actually.
So there's a shout out to people. If you're coming to see Jordan Rudess in Melbourne, come and say hi. I'll be at the VIP.
Absolutely. And if you are coming to see them in Sydney, I see him in Sydney as well. I will be organising a meetup prior, depending on numbers, of course. I know we've had a couple of people ask us about it already. So I'm going to try and organise something prior to that show.
Fantastic.
Also, it's probably worth noting as well, I was actually able to catch up with Jordan over the phone a couple of days ago. So I've actually got that interview for you lucky listeners at the end of this show. So stick around to hear that one.
Absolutely. I'll be looking forward to hearing it as well because for various reasons that we don't necessarily need to go into, I haven't even heard the interview yet. This is that recent and that new.
What?
I haven't even heard what's on the interview yet. So I'll be looking forward to listening to that as well.
But yeah, it was interesting to see the standing and seating thing. Now, you went to Def Leppard a couple of weeks ago, was it?
Last week, I think it was, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And last Friday night, you had some problems with people.
Do we have to talk about this? Do we really have to? All right. So, went to see Def Leppard Scorpions. Now, to be honest, I'm not really a Def Leppard fan. I'm much more of a Scorpions fan. Mm-hmm. Managed to pick up a ticket late in the bit. Now, this one was at it's called the RAC Arena now, but I know it as the Perth Arena, and I'm just going to play it ABC style and call it the Perth Arena. And it was a completely seated gig. All seats, all the way down, all the way up the floor.
Well, that's because people that listen to the Scorpions are either drug-fucked and can't walk anymore or too old to really give a fuck.
There were a lot of older people at this gig and also a lot of people who seemed to have it about 6,500 pints of beer before they got in.
Yep.
Because there were a lot of very, very, very drunk people in there. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the thing. It's Def Leppard and it's hair metal and all that shit. They were playing the Hysteria album all the way through.
Oh, awesome.
Which is perfectly fine. They're, you know, decent musicians. And I was actually much more interested in Rick Allen, the drummer. Of course, he lost his left arm in an accident some years ago. And I was interested to see, well, how's he actually doing it? And there's actually a video on YouTube, which I'll put a link in the show notes so anyone's interested, how he does the beats and stuff with only one arm. There's a lot of foot pedals going on that have triggered various drum sounds and stuff. It's quite interesting to see how he does it. Yeah. But the show was marred by drunken fuckwits. One woman who decided to get up and dance right next to me and right in front of me and then attempted to grab me, to which I told her to fuck off and push her out of the way. And then all her friends got pissed off at me. Oh, don't push my friend. I was like, what's your friend to stop being a fuckwit and dancing around in front of me?
Yeah, yeah.
So I went and found the venue manager and found another seat.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I've paid good money to come and see these guys. I didn't come
pay
money.
It was $150 a ticket.
Shit.
Yeah.
What, to see Def Leppard?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, if the Scorpions weren't there, I wouldn't have bothered at all.
You're a much braver man than I, I'll tell you that much.
Well, brave is one word for it.
yeah, maybe. Yeah. But, I mean, $150 for a ticket seems... Well, maybe it's right. I don't know. Maybe it's just another example of Australia's getting fucking bent over.
Well, now, you see, talk about bent over, because there was, like, special, like, you know, the VIP thing, and they've all got the VIP and sort of stuff. One has to guess how much that cost?
I don't know, 300?
Guaranteed seat in the first three rows, and plus some stuff. I think you may have even got to meet the band as well. I'm not sure.
I'd say $400.
Guess again.
$300?
$900.
What?
Yep. Some bloke was bitching that he paid $900. And what had happened, of course, is what happens at all seated gigs when they're seated all the way back and you can't see anything once you're more than 10 rows back. All the people at the back migrate up to the front. And security were trying to tell him to fuck off and go and sit back down. You can't stand in the aisle, blah, 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 blah. And this bloke was bitching that he paid $900 to see the show and was just, you know, swamped by a whole bunch of people who were coming from the back of the venue, which tells me that the gig should have been a fucking standing gig to start with.
Well, I mean, that would have been evident from the fact that it was Def Leppard and the Scorpions.
Yeah, it's a rock show. People want to get up and dance.
Yeah, yeah. It's not exactly like you're going to see Cold Joy.
No.
Like, you know,
or King Crimson or something, which is more of like a classical gig.
Oh,
so my new take on seated gigs. Seated gigs, perfectly fine for theatres, like the one you saw Stephen Wilson in, but shithouse for arenas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd contest that. I mean, there are certain people. I mean, McCartney was seated. So was Roger Waters. And the Eagles, every time
I've
seen
them. I saw
him
in Amsterdam. That was seated in the stands and standing on the floor.
Oh, really?
Perth was seated, but I was up the back because I'll be damned if I'm paying $350 to sit in a seat down the front.
It was fully seated in Sydney.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, but I mean, each to their own, I suppose. But I'm just kind of bewildered at the $900 to see fucking Def Leppard and the Scorpions.
Yeah.
I mean, they had like four good songs.
Yeah.
Shots fired.
If I hadn't paid so much money, I probably would have walked out after I had that interaction with the fan.
Yeah, well,
I stayed to the end because I thought.
And again, we're sounding like cranky old people telling people to get off our lawn. But I mean, this all just comes back down to gig etiquette on the punter's side, you know? Yep. Like,
have some respect for the people around you. Don't have a million pints of beer and then walk in there expecting like you own the place.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there was a guy halfway through the show like jumping up on the seats and jumping around, and it was like, oh, God damn it. Stop being an asshole.
I know.
Have some fucking respect for the people around you.
I will put one in here as well. I went and saw Polaris at the Metro Theatre on last Friday, I think it was. So not Friday, just gone the one before. No, Saturday just before. Part one, holy shit, they were good. Not generally my type of music. I generally not a huge fan of that hardcore, you know, sort of stuff. You know, it's just, it leaves me a little cold. But
yeah,
so
after,
far
I mean,
as
it's fine for a couple of songs, after a while it all sounds the same.
Yeah, yeah. So they were supported by, and I want to just put this in context for a second, these guys are from the Sutherland Shire here in Sydney. All right. They go to the same, they practice at the same studio that my band practices at. Okay. I've known them for quite some time. These guys have had three back-to-back sold-out tours this year, and supporting them on this tour was The Devil Wears Prada.
Really?
Yeah.
So that support.
That gives you an idea, right? These guys came out and they wiped the floor with everyone else. It was insane how good it was, right? That was just unbelievable. So we're doing our photography thing, right? Finish up a photography. And I'm standing off to the side of the photographer's pit where we generally stand to watch the rest of the show. Anyway, third song, it wasn't the third song, it was fourth song or fifth song or something. The lead singer was like, hey, so, you know, if you haven't crowd surfed before, this is the song to do it.
Naturally, everyone decided to
crowd surf.
Oh, God, not there.
No. It was fine. The security guards actually did their job. There were about 10 of them. Helping people over the barrier and so on. There was a constant flow of people all night just going over the top, like the whole night, right? So these guys actually did their job. They had their secchis on hand. They obviously had communicated with the audience as to what was going to happen and the venue as to what was going to happen. They were tight. They did all their stuff. There were a couple of guys that went over the top and sort of landed and bad ways, but that's what happens when you crowd surf. Cool.
Security sort of grab a hold of a limb and don't sort of, the guy doesn't know what's happening. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. However, the one that pissed me off was a guy, I think it was the second last song. This guy goes over the top and he'd been going over the top all night. Right. And I'd seen him run past stacks of times. Then he proceeded. He was about 6'2". I'm not a tall guy. I'm about 5'8". He then proceeded to stand in front of me in the photographer's pit.
Oh, come on.
And I tapped him on the shoulder and I went, "Oi, dude, fuck off."
And he goes, "Get the fuck away."
He's like, "What?" And I said, just piss off, mate. You're not supposed to be in the photographer's pit." "Oh, I just want it." "No, fuck off." and he'd obviously had half a skinful, so he got, you know, a bit boisterous about it. So I just looked at the security guard who I'd been speaking to between every single band that was on, right? I just looked at him and just pointed to the guy and just, you know, made the thumb motion, you know, get him out, and kicked him out. And that, my friends, is the difference between good security guards and communication between the bands and so on and so forth, and bad communication between bands and so on and so forth, like what we saw the other night at Polyphia, or in your case at Def Leppard, where you've got drunken shit tits doing shit they shouldn't be fucking doing.
Yeah.
And I do want to say as well, just while I'm here, if the guys from Polaris are listening, because I know one of them does listen to the podcast, everything I just said, I mean, you guys fucking rocked it. So keep it up.
I'll have to check those guys out. I'm not 100% familiar with Polaris's music, but
like I said, it's screamy stuff. So not exactly my cup of tea, but they were extremely impressive to watch. Yeah. And I would recommend going and seeing them live. They are amazing live. Incredible.
All right.
So from one tour to another tour. have you heard of Threaten?
Yeah, this kind of blew up over last night, didn't it?
It did.
So the backstory is here. There is a band in America called Threaten. And they went on tour in the UK and allegedly, and this is where the fun starts, allegedly sold out UK tour. Mm. So they got to the underworld in Camden, in London, and they played to a grand total of three people, despite allegedly having a sold out tour. Mm-hmm. So the opening band for this particular show did some digging around and discovered that all of the Facebook likes that they have been paid for. All of the tickets that were sold to some people in Brazil, of all places, and that their Spotify channel has a grand total of 30 monthly listeners. So someone was trying to figure out, how the hell did this guy get a tour?
Money
it's
talks.
like a Tommy Wiseau situation with The Room or something. It's madness.
You know I don't play live.
Yeah, he's hired himself a backing band. Apparently the backing band were better than he was. Apparently he was terrible.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. Have you seen his fucking videos?
I have seen one of the videos, yeah. Oh, I don't think I'm... God. It's going to take a lot of bourbon to scrub that one from my brain.
Oh, man. Eye bleach is required. But this, I think this brings up something a little bit more... sinister, I suppose, in the music industry at the moment. And that is this whole paying for likes thing.
It's not just in the music industry. It's everywhere to do with, like, trying to build your brand, be it on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, whatever. It's, yeah.
I think it's kind of, yeah, I mean, I think it's wrong.
There's anyone who's going to argue with that. That's a truism, you're having to pay for things. But this is the culture that we live in. Everybody wants to be famous. Everybody wants to be famous for 15 minutes, you know, get their 15 minutes out there. And they're prepared to throw money at it to become. It's almost like the sort of 21st century, like payola. You familiar with the concept of payola?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, for those who are not familiar with it, payola is the idea of, like, paying a radio station to play your record and give it good promotion and stuff, and, hey, listen to this. And so that stuff is obviously very illegal now, but this is almost like sort of a social media version of payola.
Well, the interesting thing is it's still not illegal. Payola is not illegal.
Really? I thought it was.
Nope, you just have to declare it.
Oh, okay.
So a few years ago, I had a rapper. I had to review a rap album, and I got selected to do it because I actually knew the guy who released the album. And I believe the line that I said about it was it was like a 13-track album or something like that. Could have been reduced to about 5. The rest of them felt underdone. Like, they just didn't. To be honest with you, I thought it was a shitty album. But it turns out that the company I was working for at the time had received money from him for advertising.
And they wanted a favorable review out of you.
Well, I think he was hoping that that it was going to get a good review from myself. And the review actually never saw the light of day.
Oh, did it just?
Nope, never saw the light of day. It was never released because the editor of the magazine actually said to me, he said, look, you put us in a bit of a sticky situation because, and he told us, he's paid for advertising and da-da-da-da-da. And I said to this guy, I said, look, I'm not going to say it's great if it's not. And he said, no, that's fine. He said, we're happy to release it. It might just have to wait a month or so before, you know, so we get all the press stuff done and everything. I said, yeah, that's fine. To my knowledge, it never got released.
So hang on, they were gonna wait for all the advertising and all the rest of it, and then put a review out to slag the album off. Basically, no wonder they held the review back.
Yeah.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Talk about integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Mm. But anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, this threatened guy. If anyone wants to have a look at the music and such, it's threatened, spelt threat, and then in.
We'll put a link in the show notes to the article from the NME.
Yeah,
they have a write-up, and there's some YouTube videos embedded in that article. So if you want to read more or less the whole story, it's all in that NME article. Which brings me to an interesting question. If this is a tour that nobody went to and nobody looked at, how the hell did the NME pick up on it? I've got a sneaky conspiracy theory here.
And that is?
I think the guy himself, this threatened guy, rang up the NME hoping to try and get more press on top of press. Because the venues messaging him on Facebook saying, don't ever book a gig with us again. The Underworld got involved and they said, you had 3 people turn up to your show. We're not returning your calls. Please don't ask us for a show again.
Well,
because you stitched us up. Because they would have lost money on that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they had to pay bar staff. They had to get things in, turn the lights on, and they played to 3 people. You know? And apparently one of them was one of the support band guys who stuck around to hear the show.
Well, that's fair. I mean, that's what you want to do. You want to stick around and hear all that sort of stuff because
it's just madness. And I reckon the guys rung up the NME himself and said and told, you know, as like on a bot account or something, it's like a fake thing, and said, oh, look at this tour, you know, what horrible people, trying to get more press for himself. You know, under the old this is a quote by Andy Warhol, I think, don't read your press, weigh it. You know, all press is good press, no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or the other option is that the venue themselves rang up the NME and said, as like a thing, this guy's a fraudster. He's got a tour booked all over the rest of, because I think he's off to, he was playing in Birmingham last night and then he's playing somewhere else tonight. So maybe the other venues, they're trying to warn the other venues that this is a con. Make sure you get your money out of him before, you know, you get stitched up.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other flip side of it as well. That's what he could be doing, which is probably more likely, actually, when you think about it.
You think what? Sort of bring up the press yourself and blow the whistle on your own fake, on your own dodgy tour?
No. The latter, you know, the people who were saying, look, get your money out of him beforehand because he's going to con people.
Yep, and then you're going to lose money. Or just say, nah, we're not doing your show. You know, fuck off.
Yeah, well, that's the other option as well. So
speaking of other tours that are going on through Europe, Devin Townsend recently, and I mean really recently, this is only a couple of hours old, has very recently announced a solo acoustic tour through Europe.
That would be really cool to see, actually.
Oh, yeah. He's actually playing a couple of shows in India as well, of all places.
No, it doesn't surprise me. The India, we've discussed this before on the podcast, the Indian metal scene and so on is actually booming at the moment. So it doesn't surprise me.
This is true. Yeah, so he's playing a bunch of shows in Europe through March and April, a bunch of shows in the UK in April. So something to look out for. There's a whole bunch of bands that are going on tour through March and April, actually. Riverside are going on tour. Antimatter are going on tour. The Neil Morse Band will be going on tour with their new record.
Yep. Hopefully they bring that here.
Neil Morse?
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath.
I'm not holding my breath.
Not even Hillsong could get him out here.
What?
Hillsong had a crack trying to get him out here in 2011 on the back of the Testimony 2 album. They wanted him to come and do some like worship type, you know, doing his Jesus stuff, which is perfectly fine. He's more than entitled to express his religious views however he likes. But even they couldn't do it. They couldn't manage to get the economics of it to work. And it was just apparently him and his guitar.
Yeah, right.
That's what I was told. I saw this on a forum, so.
Well, if you read it on the internet, it must be true.
Well, I believe the person who posted this was somewhat associated with Hillsong. I mean, I have no idea. I have no association with Hillsong at all and don't really want to. We'll leave that. We'll skip past that one.
Yeah, let's just skip past that one.
Yeah. So Neil Morse coming to Australia, I wouldn't hold your breath.
True. I mean, that's about it, I think, for the news, isn't it, this time around? I mean, this is a fucking lot of news because we actually haven't recorded for a little while. So, I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, that's about it for the news. So now we'll skip on to our albums.
Yeah, and there's a few that we've got to do this time round. I think we should probably start with the new Coheed and Cambria.
So the reason we haven't done a recorded episode for a while, as you know, we recorded the New South Wales government episode ahead of time, and last week we had Voyager on the show. So the reason for that is because I've been off gallivanting again.
Yay! What was it that you said earlier? You wanted to go on record to make sure that everybody knew that you were a bastard.
I don't know that I think you're a bastard, that I hate you, but you have already professed that I'm the bastard and that I'm the one gallivanting. So
exactly.
This adventure led me to London. Mm-hmm. So I went to see a bunch of shows in London. The big one actually was the Jeff Lynne's Electric Light Orchestra, which I went and saw on my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily have anything to say about that show specifically. I mean, they played pretty much all of the big ELO hits and one song by the Traveling Wilburys, of all things.
Huh, there you go.
So, yeah, I don't necessarily have anything to say about that show specifically. The one show that I would like to talk about is Coheed and Cambria.
Ooh, lucky son.
And we spoke about on our show from the Summer of Prog that the new single from that album, The Dark Sentencer, had been released. Mm-hmm. Now, they opened the show with that song, and boy, did that rock live.
I'll bet it did. It seems like one of those ones that's stupidly well-produced but still has a little bit of room to just, you know, slam it through
live. Yeah. And the Roundhouse, I mean, that was I don't think it was quite sold out that night, but it was pretty close too. Great venue, actually. I was genuinely surprised with the Roundhouse. It's quite a nice venue to see stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
So they played most of the bits and pieces from the new album, even though it is a concept record and it's following on from the story from the previous albums, they didn't actually play the whole thing all the way through, which is what I was expecting was going to happen.
Hmm.
They sort of played bits and pieces of it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that was rather interesting. Great show. As for the album itself, which was released a couple of weeks ago, this is the problem for me with Coheed and Cambria, is because I came to Coheed and Cambria very late. The first record that I heard of theirs was the previous one to this one. And that, as we discussed a couple of episodes ago, is not connected to the big overarching story that the whole band has been sort of going along with for the last couple of years. So coming into this album sort of feels a bit like, I don't know, picking up the fourth Harry Potter book and then trying to jump into the story from there. So I'm going to have to go back.
Everybody knows the third Harry Potter book was the best anyway, so you would have missed that.
fair enough.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would love to see the new album and the new song live. It'd be freaking amazing, I reckon. Yeah, all I can say is I'm jealous. That's all I can say.
You know. Yeah, popular theme on this show is your jealousy for me and my jealousy for you.
Yay! Speaking of new albums too,
I think it's Haken.
However the hell it is that they
say. We'll take our beating on the internet later.
Yeah. Have you heard their new one?
Oh, yes, have I heard their new album. Man, that album rocks.
What a weapon of a fucking album, eh?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, killer. I have to wonder whether or not there was a little bit of influence from the Shattered Fortress.
That's a good point. They spent more or less a whole year touring around with Mike Portnoy doing the Shattered Fortress stuff, and this album definitely has more of a sort of heavier metal influence than even the previous record, which was still a pretty heavy record. The one thing I would like to say about Haken is that I think that their mixing of traditional sort of rock and roll and the electronic drums and different keyboard sounds, stuff like that, is really, really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. They're probably not going to like the comparison, but I'm going to make it anyway. Sort of like Dream Theater with more stuff.
Jordan's
kind of dabbled in the electronic space with these different applications and Geo Shred and stuff like that. But Diego definitely takes it in a whole new, further direction.
Oh, totally, totally.
Yeah. So of the particular songs on the album, which one did you like?
To be really honest with you, I just like the whole album.
Yeah.
And it's really rare. Like, that is a really rare thing for me not to be able to isolate a particular song off for any reason that's, you know, this one is, I think, even a hair better than every of the other songs. But, yeah, no. That was just phenomenal from start to finish. It was really, really good. On that stuff with the sound effects and everything like that, I found it really interesting that they had that mix of that kind of glitchy stuff.
Yeah.
In amongst some of the songs, you know, and it just really, I mean, I'm really interested to see how they do it live.
It'll
be a backing track of some kind, but I mean,
possibly, or maybe just some loops or something.
Yeah,
you know, loops and things that they can do with keyboards. You can do all that sort of stuff with keyboards.
As well as that, I love the lead singer's voice in Haken.
Yeah.
He sounds like halfway between Maynard and Kenny.
Okay.
Like the,
I was definitely getting a Tesseract kind of vibe from the sort of the sound of the vocals and all that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, particularly in this latest album, I'm driving along and I'm listening to it and I'm going, shit, that sounds like Ian Kenny. And then he dropped into this other thing. I was like, fuck, that sounds like Maynard. Like, and it was just that blend of the two. It was just, oh, man. Just everything about that album was mint from start to finish. Just so good. So fucking good.
Yeah, that one's definitely going to be up there for me for albums of the year. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be in the top five for me.
Oh, definitely. One, Riverside.
Yep.
The Pineapple Thief record.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I'm trying to think.
The one that I recommended you a couple of weeks ago.
Lux Terminus. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Lux Terminus.
And probably Tangled Thoughts of Leaving, because I got to rip my hometown boys somehow.
Yeah, unless Carnival release something in the next little while.
Because they've got something in the pipeline, haven't they?
They certainly do. That's why they're doing the Unify show down in Melbourne.
That's very true. They're playing a couple of shows here in Western Australia.
They are indeed.
Which are actually already sold out, even though we are 3 months away from. They've put out, they did, I think it started with one show in Perth, then they did a second one, and then they've got a third one.
Three.
Yeah. All at the Rosemount Hotel, though, which is just, oh, God.
Yeah.
Why the Rosemount? Why?
So they can sell it out
like
three times.
Sounds like a fucking tin can.
Yeah, so they can sell it out three times.
Yeah.
Literally, why
couldn't they play somewhere better? Why couldn't they play the Capitol or something?
Speaking of just really quickly on Australian prog tours, are you going to COG?
Ooh, when are they playing?
February, I think, from memory.
Oh, yeah.
So Osaka Punch is supporting.
Yes, I did see that. Hang on. I did see.
I jumped on touring. That,
I did
mate.
See the. Yeah,
like,
when are
the
they
second
playing?
The tickets went on sale, I'm like, yep, bye. Because it was, they're playing Max Watts here in Sydney.
They're not coming to Perth, the rat bastards. It's an East Coast tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, somewhere at Taugradi, I think. Don't know where that is.
Yep.
And then Port Macquarie.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, hey, if you want to fly over for it, I'm more than happy to put you up.
Might be able to, actually. We'll see.
I'm more than happy to put you up.
Did you listen to the Dream Cities record?
I did. I did listen to the new Dream Cities record. I really liked it. And we're actually going to try and get these guys on the show in the next couple of weeks to have a chat about it. It was interesting. That's what I'll say. I'm not too sure the rapping really worked for me.
Yeah. The first record, there wasn't any, as far as I can work out now, I've seen Dream Cities play twice. I saw them when they opened for another post-rock band, Soulkiri.
Yep.
When they played at the old Blackwire Records, RIP, and then when they played the Birds Robes Collective 10th Anniversary Show, which Toe Hider and Sleep Makes Waves headlined.
Yeah.
That show, that Dream, when I saw Dream Cities play, there was a lot of sampled vocals, and some of them I think was rapping, but most of it was mostly instrumental. And the guitar player, he shreds like nobody I've ever heard. He's fantastic.
Yep, phenomenal.
Fantastic guitar player. And I tried to ask him after the show. I was like, "Oh, who are your influences? Where do you draw your influences from?" It turns out I think he's quite inspired by jazz. He's like a jazz guy.
Yeah.
So maybe some fusion stuff and things like that.
I'm
really interested to
me.
Find out what his influences are and where the melding of that and the rap comes from. Because it's an interesting mix, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it is a really, really interesting mix, and it's probably a little bit too far gone for my tastes, to be honest. But I can certainly see the appeal in it. And I can see the musicality behind it is just unbelievable. But,
the Solo brothers, Alex Solo on the bass and Mike Solo on drums, they do a really great job as the rhythm section there.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And like I said, the actual album itself is probably a little far gone for my tastes. But, hey, listeners, you should definitely check it out because these guys are musically, they are very, very, very advanced and very musically in tune, I suppose, is what they're trying to do, and they're experimenting, which is really what prog music is all about. So,
absolutely. I'll put a link in the show notes to their Bandcamp page. I urge people to go and have a listen to their first record as well that came out a couple of years ago. That's a really, really good record. I quite enjoyed that one.
I think it's their first album, I think, was more up my alley, to be honest.
Yeah,
but that's
absolutely
not to say that the second one's a bad album. It's just not my taste.
Yeah. This is the thing. This is what bands, they progress. They go off in different directions. And I wasn't expecting the hip-hop influences on this record, which is when I heard that this record was coming out. I was all excited. I was like, yes, you know, the first record was amazing and the second one's going to be great. And then I heard the stuff and I was like, oh, okay. It's in a different place than what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I still like it. I still want to keep following these guys and see what they get up to. They're all, pretty young, well, younger guys, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see where they go over the next couple of years.
I think it will be too, yeah.
So I think we've kept the good people of this podcast waiting long enough.
I think we have. Now, I need to put a little bit of a caveat on this interview, and I need to explain something. I had a bit of an issue with my recorder. So the first couple of minutes of this interview is actually missing. So I'm going to have to explain as best I can what's actually happened.
Of all the times for the technology to screw up.
I know.
Of all the times for it to cock up, it had to be that one.
I know, it had to be this one. It couldn't have been one of the less significant ones.
Well, not less significant because all the people we interview are significant in their own way, but...
That's true.
You know, we wanted to get Dream Theater on the show. It's the new tour. He's got a tour coming, the album's coming out, and we nail an interview, and then the technology fails us.
Yep. So the first couple of questions that I asked were pretty well about the genesis of the tour. So long story short, and I can try and give you the Spark Notes version, I suppose, of it, is he really wanted to do a tour that was based around his influences, because who really often gets the chance to do that, right? So he was actually speaking to his wife, and his wife said, hey, if you're going to do that, you need to make it sort of more theatrical. And have a bit of a storyline behind it and everything like that. So that's sort of the genesis of where it came from and how it evolved into more it's apparently more a theatrical kind of piece, with Jordan obviously going through his sort of through his musical story almost.
That's very interesting. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that his wife suggested that, because I think I'm right in saying this, that his wife works in the theatre world.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is involved in that world of the business. I think she was helping out actually at the Live Scenes of New York show. She was backstage helping out with stuff using her experience in that world.
That's correct. Yes. So, you know, it definitely definitely was worth chatting to Jordan. And I'm going to flick over now to the start, or the bit of the interview where the recording actually didn't go all glitchy and strange and actually recorded from. And we can go from there. And so, I mean, you've obviously named the show From Buck to Rock. Is it fair to say that Buck is an influence on your piano playing style, or was it just kind of a catchy name that you grabbed out of the ether to make it sort of, you know, more theatrical, as you said earlier?
Well, actually, in reality, Bach, of the many, many composers that I've, gotten to play the music of, Bach is really important to me. I loved Bach when I was in my student days studying classical music. I just thought that his way of dealing with counterpoint, you know, all these moving lines, was just so interesting. And I especially liked it at the piano, because on the piano, the whole thing about playing a piano is kind of like being able to separate your right hand from your left. And Bach extends that to where you need to separate different musical lines that might be happening in each hand. So it's kind of like almost the highest, academic mental place that you could put yourself musically in as a pianist is to play the music of Bach. So, I love that. And then when I got into like progressive rock, some of my favorite groups, like specifically like Gentle Giant, they were doing some great things with counterpoint that reminds me how much I love that type of thing. So the Bach to rock thing, it just made sense for me, really, because it really did. And the other thing is that when I started at Juilliard, I think the first piece that I played was the Bach Prelude. Literally, the first assignment was Bach. So that is specifically what the journey entails.
You obviously touched on a couple of your other more modern influences, let's say. Who are some of your influences? Because obviously you are an influence to so many people around the world, whether they be a pianist or, you know, someone who's designing an app for an iPad these days. Who are some of your other great influences when it comes to your musicality and probably the rest of your life?
Well, today we're actually celebrating the remembrance of one of my great influences, because Keith Emerson, this is his birthday, he died a couple of years ago. So I would say in the rock world, he was one of my greatest, or the most powerful, you know, influence. It was the Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Tarkus album that really changed my life. Mm-hmm. So, and then also, you know, of that kind of period, I mean, certainly like Rick Wakeman was a very big influence. Guys like Patrick Mraz, played with Yes for a while in the Moody Blues. Who else was important? Jan Hammer, George Duke, and, you know, so in the keyboard world, those were some of the bigger influences.
So far as, you know, obviously when it comes to, you know, the keyboard world and obviously the app world now, you are quite the powerhouse when it comes to, you know, musical apps and so on and so forth. I was actually speaking to one of the other heads of the Dream Theatre Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand the other day, and he said, I'd love to know where Jordan comes up with his new sounds from. He said, he's a true innovator in the prog keyboard space in combination and the orchestration of his keyboard sounds. So where does the influence actually come from to create these new wacky sounds that we hear on, well, everything that you've played, but probably most notably the Dream Theater stuff?
Yeah, well, ever since I discovered the synthesizer, I've always been into finding sounds. I've been into the sonics. I've been passionate about musical expression and what that means in, you know, modern electronic instruments. So it's kind of almost like a natural thing for me to be a sonic explorer. And as part of that, I started my own business with the music that makes all the app stuff, makes the cutting edge apps. So, you know, the new sounds come from this kind of desire to, you know, dive into the sonic world. Now, one thing that's interesting is we live in a world today where as a synthesis, there's so much software, so many sounds that are available. Part of the job as a keyboardist or a synthesist is to kind of almost like locate where the sound you want, because there's endless libraries. But then the other part is to be able to, as needed, be able to use whatever the, you know, tools are, synthesizers or virtual instruments, to be able to modify to make something your own. So over the years, I've crafted a lot of sounds, which I would call my personal sounds. Things like my lead sound, which is definitely a signature sound, or like some like more kind of almost like electronic sounds, or sounds like that are really super heavy, but they're on the keyboard and they really bite and they work well with Dream Theater, and they're just things that I kind of came up with by turning some knobs. So it's like it comes from the sensitivity and the desire and the interest and the passion for sound.
And that's something that you've had for obviously quite some time. I can remember you having the Bebot, was it Bebot app? Back in the Black Clouds and Silver Linings era. And then obviously you've gone on to create some of your own fantastic apps and so on and so forth. Are there any that you are particularly proud of at the moment and you're going to be bringing out on this Back to Rock tour?
Yeah. The one that I'm going to show as part of the Back to Rock experience is I'm going to bust out GeoShred. GeoShred, this is GeoShred. It's my latest musical instrument that runs on iOS systems. So you can run it on your iPad or your iPhone. Probably a little bit more fun to play on your iPad because you can stretch out. It's certainly reasonable on the iPhone as well. And that's, again, my latest instrument. It's an instrument based on a technology called physical modeling, which was developed by one of my partners who goes by the name of Julius Smith at Stanford University. So, people who come out to my show can expect me to get crazy on that and do some serious shredding.
That is, I think, what all people in the audience are going to be looking forward to, seeing you, you know, shredding away on the keys or the screen, as it may be in this case.
Yeah, right.
One thing that I think a lot of fans, particularly of Dream Theater, and just turning to Dream Theater just for a second, are curious about is whether or not we're ever going to see the day when Jordan Rudess contributes lyrics. Is that something that's on the horizon? I mean, you've got a new album coming out in, I believe it's February or January next year. Are there any lyrics by Jordan Rudess on that one?
Well, there are no lyrics on the Dream Theater album by me, but in April, I'm going to be releasing my new solo rock album through Mascot Records, and there's a bunch of songs on there, and I wrote the lyrics for all of them.
So that's this. To take us through very quickly, this new album that's coming out. You say it's a rock album. Is it sort of more focused on? So are we talking rock like Guns N' Roses here, or are we talking, you know, Dream Theater kind of eras of rock?
You're asking about the Dream Theater album or my solo?
No. Sorry, I'm asking about the Jordan Rudess, the new solo album you've got coming out.
Oh yeah, my solo album is. Kind of a, if anybody out there has been following my solo albums, I released the last one was called Rhythm of Time. It was a number of years ago, and before that was I Rode Home, Rhythm of Time, Beating the Wheels. And they're generally very progressive, you know, keyboard bass, but with other, but with guitars and drums. And this one is kind of an extension of that. It goes from extremely progressive, like wild and crazy. Songs, there's definitely songs, and I'm singing some songs on it, and it's just an all out, you know, if anybody wants to know what's going on inside of my brain, this would be a good album to listen to.
Excellent. So with that, obviously we have to talk about very quickly the new Dream Theater album, Dream Theater 14, as it's sort of known across the interwebs, and this ARG that Dream Theater have running for it as well. Guys are releasing that next year, early in next year. Is there anything you can tell us, can reveal to us that we don't already know from the other interviews and from the releases that you've made? Anything you can reveal to us here?
Well, we just revealed today the album cover and also the name of the album and our first run tour date. It was put on all the Dream Theater fan sites this morning. So you'll find out soon enough that the album is called Distance Over Time. Mm-hmm. And you'll love the cover. It looks really, really cool. Very excited about it.
Excellent.
And it's going to come sometime in late February.
Late February, yes. I think we're all very much looking forward to the new Dream Theater album. Obviously looking forward to you as well here in Sydney playing, or across Australia, I should say, playing your From Buck to Rock show. One last question that I always like to ask sort of at the end of an interview, and that is, tell us something we don't know.
That you don't know. Mm-hmm. People don't know a lot of things. let's see, what would be something that you don't know? I don't know. You don't know that I played the clarinet when I was 7 years old.
There you go. For 2 weeks?
Yeah, it was an instrument that I tried, but I was really bad at it, and I didn't like to blow into the mouthpiece. It felt really awkward, so I gave it up.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for joining us here on the 9/8 podcast. And, you know, on behalf of the Dream Theater Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand as well, thank you so much and wish you all the very best. I believe in the theater world they say break a leg, but that's always seemed to be a bit negative to me. So I wish you all the very best here in Australia for your tour. And thank you so much. No problems. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us.
Yes, and thank you also for your support with my my big solo run. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problems at all. Nothing we can't do. And if you need anything from us here at the Fan Club or on the 9/8 podcast, please feel free to let us know.
Awesome. Very cool. Take care. Bye-bye now.
So it was really great of Jordan to take the time to speak with me from his home studio there in New York. It was great always to chat with him. I think that's about the third time I've actually chatted with him, which is amazing that I've been able to speak with him and other members of Dream Theater. It's really a dream come true for any music journalist to speak to your some of your biggest influences and some of your most favorite acts as well. Now, I think we should probably move on to some album reviews from the last couple of weeks. Hoggy, you gave me an album by Al Di Meola.
Yep. His most recent album, actually, an album called Opus.
Yes.
What'd you think?
Dude, it's Al Di Meola. What do you think I thought? Was it going to be enough. Anything else other than this is awesome?
Yeah.
The guy's a weapon. He's always been a weapon. And what's really interesting is Al Di Meola is one of the big influences, obviously, of John Petrucci. And I can, like, I don't know. He's just got this way of playing that just takes you on a journey, and you can almost close your eyes and imagine all of the different scenes of a movie as he's playing through. And it's incredible the way that he articulates everything, and you know, everything is there, but everything is not there. And what he doesn't play is almost as important as what he does. It's just amazing. He's an amazing, amazing guitarist, and I loved the album. Two thumbs up from me. Everyone listening, go out and listen to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's a great record. The orchestration as well, the mixing of the classical guitar and the strings is fantastic. It's great.
It is, absolutely. And, I mean, it's very ambitious for people to do that kind of stuff.
Especially at the stage in his career.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
the guy's, what is he? He must be in his 60s or something by now.
I think so, yeah.
I had the great opportunity of actually to see Al Di Meola play live a couple of years ago when I was in Sofia.
Yeah, right.
Play a classical gig. It was just him and another guitar player, I believe. Yeah, they were, and maybe someone doing some congas or something. I can't quite remember. And that was great. That was off the back of his previous album, Elysium. And he did another album as well with like Beatles covers as well.
Yes, yeah.
He did some number of Beatles covers. I think he may have covered Yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think he covered Blackbird as well. There were a couple of Beatles covers in the middle of the set, which is great.
Yeah,
I also had the opportunity to meet him as well after the show, which is great. He's a nice guy.
I refer you to my previous comment of you being a bastard.
You're going to call me a bastard again. Yeah. So speaking of meeting rock stars and being jealous of me, you'll never guess who I got to meet while I was in London.
Phil Collins.
No, not Phil Collins. That would have been nice.
Bugger.
No, Rick Wakeman.
Oh, you motherfucker.
So this wasn't like a private thing at all. This was actually an album signing at the HMV in Oxford Street in London. So he has a new album out called Piano Odyssey. And he's done he did an album previously, which is called Piano Portraits. This one is Piano Odyssey, where he's done covers of other songs. So he's he covered some Yes stuff as well. He covered, he did And You and I, he covered Roundabout, and he also did a cover with the piano of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, right.
And Brian May appears on that in guitar, with the Spanish guitar part. And he was explaining how he put the record together, and then his producer or his manager said to him, "Hey, have you sent this to Brian May and see what he thinks?" And Rick was like, "Oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that, actually. That was, no, maybe not." And the guy said, "Just send it to him anyway. Just send it." He's like, "Okay." So he sent it to Brian May. And Brian loved it and said, "Do you know what this thing needs? This thing needs some guitar. I could record something for you." So apparently he just sort of recorded something in one take, sent it back to record. Record it ended up on the record.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
How good would that be?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing a cover of, you know, one of the greatest rock opera songs that's ever been made. I'm just going to shoot it to the guy that made it and see what he says. "Oh, it's really cool. I want to add to it." I'm sorry, you want to do what?
Well, those two are great mates, actually. They've sort of met up at various awards nights and stuff. Those two are actually good friends. There was a story I wanted to relay that he was mentioning in this little Q&A he did before the album signing. And apparently he was on tour, I think he was on tour with Yes, or it may have been on with ARW or something, and some bloke came up to John Anderson and said to him, "I figured out what the lyrics to Sound Chaser," it's from the Relayer album, "I figured out what it all means, and it's about the Shastric scriptures, and it's about this and that, and blah, da, 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 da." And John Anderson sits there and listens to the guy, and he says, "Yep, you're absolutely right. You've nailed it. I'm glad you worked it out." And the guy went away all chuffed with his signed record or whatever. And then Rick turned to John and said, "Is that what it's really about?" And John said, "No, it's about a riverboat ride I took back in the 70s. And Rick said, "But you just told that guy that it was about all this other stuff." And John was like, if that's what the guy thinks it's about, then that's what it's about. It doesn't bother me what people interpret my songs to be about. And I thought, what a fantastic way of thinking about your own lyrics.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and I think it shows a certain level of emotional intelligence as well to be able to say, no, you know, like, cool, I'm glad that you like the song enough to actually think on it and interpret it the way you want. You know, good on you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I really like that. I think that's really admirable.
Mm. I also had the opportunity to ask Rick as well. He's written two books, Grumpy Old Rockstar and Further Adventures of a Grumpy Old Rockstar. He's got a third one coming out next year. So right. if you have those two books and you've read those two books, get ready. There's a third one coming. And those two books are bloody hilarious.
Is it called, Rick Wakeman 3, The Return of the Grumpy Old Rockstar? Or
something like that. I'm not 100% sure what the title's going to be, but something along those lines. Apparently he's got a new book coming out.
Awesome. That's good. That's good. I'll have to get a copy of the first two and have a read.
Yeah. Okay. You can't have all my copy, so though. He signed mine.
Okay. All right. I'll buy my own then. And I'll get mine signed. And you can I'll get it signed twice.
I'm joking, man. If you want to borrow my copies, I'll send it to you. So the album that you gave to me was Tom Waits' Alice from 2002.
Yeah. Interested to hear what you think.
Yeah. Definitely a lot better than Scott Walker, that's for sure. Which is the original reason why you gave me the record.
Because you're fucking hard.
For those who people didn't listen, I gave Dave the album Scott Walker, by Scott Walker, is called The Drift, to listen to. And you fucking hated it. You said it was the worst thing you'd ever heard in your life.
Literally, yeah, the worst album I've ever heard. And it was just bad.
And in case people hadn't guessed, I may have decided to deliberately set Dave up with that one. No, give him a record that I thought he'd hate.
That's fine. But as I said to you in that episode as well, nothing will ever be as bad as that again. So I'm fine with that.
There's the benchmark. The sort of the basement level has been set at that record.
Exactly.
I found this interesting, really, really interesting to listen to.
Mm.
Some of the, like, you know, he's obviously got a very deep, gravelly voice. But then there was one song in there where he sort of sounded like the Cookie Monster.
Was that Kommenetsuch Bear?
Yes, there was that one, but it's also the second album on the record. I'm just going to pull it up so I can get the name right.
Flower's Grave?
Yes, that's the one. Flower's Grave, yeah. He sort of sounded a bit like the Cookie Monster, which was really, really interesting.
Yeah,
very fascinating record. I'm going to have to listen to some more of Tom Waits to see what else he's got, because there's definitely a lot of Tom experimentation Waits in that record.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Waits is not about the lyrics and the overall meaning of songs and things like that. Granted, Alice is more mainstream than a lot of his other stuff.
That's the mainstream stuff. Amazing, oh, shit, have I got something to listen to then?
Yeah. His stuff is far more experimental than that normally, and it's more about the atmosphere that he builds. So it's really interesting to listen to, because he's got some guys who work with him who, for example, make drum kits out of, you know, the top of trash can lids and things like this, and the cymbals. Yeah. So the cymbals are made of like ice. So when you hit them, they disintegrate and they give you this particular sound. And then he uses that at one particular point of the show and all. Really, really cool guy. So far as all that's concerned. I'm glad you liked it, actually, because it is my favorite Tom Waits album. And the opening track, Alice, is just incredible. Lyrically and musically. And it was one of the first songs that I got into so far as jazz was concerned. It's almost my gateway into jazz.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of a jazz sort of thing going on there. A lot of jazz and rock and the sort of, I almost sort of think of it as almost like almost listening to it like a smoky jazz club somewhere, you know, with someone's just sort of, and then counts into the song and that sort of thing.
Yep. So I'm glad. What do you reckon? Do you reckon one thumb up, two thumbs up,
I give it a thumbs up. I give it one thumbs up. Yep. It was a good album. I'll have to, obviously yep. there's a lot more that I need to listen to there to sort of get what it's all about, but I didn't hate it. It was good. I enjoyed it.
That's always, it's always a positive, right?
Yeah. So what have you got for me to listen to this week?
Yeah, for you this week, Hoggy, in light of having seen Polaris the other week, I'm going to give you their album, their latest album called The Mortal Coil. It was released, I believe, last year, 2017, I think. It goes for about 40 minutes, 11 tracks on it. I think it would be a really interesting one for you to listen to. So there you go, The Mortal Coil by Polaris.
All right.
What have you got for me?
So the band that I have for you this week is one called The Physics House Band.
Right.
I saw these guys play live when they opened for Sleep Makes Waves in London, and I was blown away by the level of musicianship here. So they only have one record, so it won't be that difficult for you to find. It's called Mercury Fountain. It's from last year.
Okay.
It's on Spotify and Bandcamp and a few other places as well. I want you to give that a listen. Tell me what you think.
Okay, I will do that. Mercury Fountain is there. It's got the, like a pink cover.
Yep. Circle in the middle and a hand doing a thing.
Yep. Cool. No problem. I will definitely listen to that. Well, I think that just about brings us to the end of this long episode. And we thank you to all our listeners for listening in again as we ramble on about stuff going on the internet. what are we going to be talking about next week? We actually hinted at it earlier in the episode. We're going to be talking about The Astonishing.
Yes, we are. We've made various oblique references to The Astonishing. Rather than just sit here and keep sniping at it, we thought we'd revisit it and give it distance and time. Distance and time, not distance over time. Hey all.
Velocity.
Give it distance and time from the record. See what we think of it looking back on it retrospectively.
Absolutely.
And the one thing I will say, though, while we've got it here, is that I'm kind of pissed off they haven't released any live version of the record, because I would love to see this performed live. It was begging for a full show production to try and bring it together, sort of like Marillion's Brave, same sort of thing, which we spoke about on the second episode.
Interestingly, I was speaking to a guy in the line last night, Stephen Wilson, and I mentioned that. I said, I'm just bummed we never got it here. This guy was from Austria, and he said, you didn't get the Astonishing tour in Australia. I said, no, they skipped over us. He said, that really sucks, because it made so much more sense after I'd seen it. And I went, that's what I've heard. I've heard that if you had seen it live, it was actually phenomenal. But we missed out on some things. So, definitely stay tuned for that one, listeners, because we mightn't actually be thinking what you think.
Yeah.
The conclusion mightn't be the conclusion that you all think. We mightn't be panning it for much longer. alternatively, we could also be absolutely belting it next week. Who knows? We will see how it all goes next week.
All right. So that about wraps it up for us. Thank you very much for listening.
Indeed it does.
If this was your first episode of listening to this show, because you've been drawn in by our interview with Jordan, please, please, please go and subscribe to the show. Give us a like on iTunes. Leave us a review. That is the way to help us grow the show and reach more of the fine people out there interested in all things prog.
Absolutely. And if this is your first show listening to us, because you have been drawn in either by someone recommending or indeed the interview with Jordan, thanks for listening and welcome to the fold. Welcome to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything prog and alt. My name is, as always, David Ellis.
And my name is Alex Hogg, and we shall see you all next time.
Thanks a lot. See you then.
See ya.